All right, folks, we are back on the T-Top Podcast brought to you by Flagstick.com. I'm sitting next to a man who was wrong last week, just like I was wrong. But I will get into that in a second. My co-host, Scott McCloud, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'll be better when I get this caffeine into me. How's that? One of those days.
One of those days. I feel I'll be better when I get this red wine into me.
Well, how does that sound? I might have to get to some of that, too.
There's not a lot, but if we get a straw, we can share.
All right, sounds good.
Why don't we just hit this clip from last week where somebody asked, who's the next Canadian that's going to win on the PGA Tour?
I got to pick Corey. I think he's got another win coming this year.
Yeah, we're a little biased that way. I think Corey's the one, although obviously Adam Hadwin's still playing well and right up there as well. Those are our top two players from Canada right now.
And as you heard, we both picked Corey Connors, and obviously Corey's our guy. We know that. But Nick Taylor, a former T-Talk podcast guest, got the T-Talk bump and picked up a win at the AT&T.
You know what? And it was just 8 weeks ago when he was on the show. So should have maybe had some recency bias with that. But obviously we've had a lot of the guys on the show. And it's been nice to see them. And, we got it wrong, but in the end, everybody got it right because, hey, it was great to see Nick Taylor win that and gave us a reason to actually watch the tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of which, we talked extensively last week about the AT&T.
At least for 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah, why don't we play that clip, too, just to show everyone how interested we were in this tournament in the first place. You know what we didn't even touch on it this week?
What's that?
The AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Do you want to talk about it?
No, not
Neither
at all.
Do I. It's the worst tournament in golf. And as you could tell, right there, we clearly love the AT&T Pro-Am.
Oh, it just
might be my favorite tournament now.
Yeah. You know, and we've talked about it. We've talked about it last year on the tournament or on the podcast. It just drives you nuts with the coverage, and you really don't get to watch any golfers, any players play. And really, you know what? All these celebrities, no thanks. I don't want to see them shanking it. And I appreciate all the shots, the wide shots of Pebble Beach, beautiful golf course. But I've seen it before. I don't really need to see it again. Just show me the leaders. Show me the golfers that are playing. That's why I tune in. And hey, you know what? It got me there watching the last round of the tournament, watching Nick Taylor fending off Phil Mickelson. And I guess that was enough to watch.
Yeah, I this was my plan all along, was to probably check in at some point on Sunday. I don't want to say I'm Pebble Beached out. You're never Pebble Beached out, but we did get to see it last year during the U.S. Open.
And it's got nothing to do really with the golf course itself. I mean, we do get to see it a lot. Mm-hmm. But it just, it's just nauseating as far as watching the same takes over and over again on this. I mean, the broadcast for CBS, it's Clint Eastwood comes in here.
Well, can we talk about Clint for a moment? Did you see that clip where they go to Clint? Clint wasn't in California in that clip. He wasn't on planet Earth. He's just staring off into the sun.
I'm not sure why they drag him. I know why they do it, but I mean, why do you drag an 89-year-old man on there and let him be ridiculed by so many people? I mean, granted, he's been a great actor. He's done lots of things, but it's kind of embarrassing when that happens there. And it only, obviously nowadays, from a social media side of it, it only ends up with all sorts of hot takes where people
memes
are mocking
and
him.
All sorts of
exactly.
Stuff, yep.
But anyways, in the end, we get tired of watching Pebble Beach. We get tired of watching the celebrities with the same shtick all the time. We get to hear about whatever fake handicap they've got, what other corporate guy is out there, see the same views. But in the end, I guess we got nine. I mean, Nick Taylor was leading wire to wire. He won wire to wire. And we got to see a pretty interesting back nine.
Yeah, the wind picked up like crazy, and it was only going to get worse as the day went on. You could see like his wife, same 18 green, was freezing.
Yeah.
She's sitting there, and my wife, we were watching. She's like, "Is she crying?" I was like, "No, she's freezing right
yeah,
now."
Probably.
It's like, I don't know the conversion.
It was in the low 50s to mid 50s, and I kept watching the live weather to see what was happening. And I don't know if you caught my tweet, but I mean, I was catching it and seeing that, oh boy, the winds are coming up here, and within a couple hours, you know, we're going to have gusts 23 steady up to 38 miles an hour as far as the gusts. So, you know, hurry up, everybody, get in there.
Yeah, and it was the front nine. It was like, okay, Nick's running away with it, awesome. And then he made it interesting. I think the weather played a huge part. Phil obviously played a huge part. He wasn't doing anything either. That one up and down though from over the green on
13.
Yeah, just from no man's land, which is classic Phil, you know. Not even like he hit it to a foot. He hits an amazing flop shot to like 20 and then he drains
and makes
it
a putt,
because that's Phil golf. But the I'm drawing blanks. I believe 15 is the long par 5 there, where, you know, Nick, he gets in trouble off the tee, and that's a whole issue. He lays up because obviously he has to. He has a 3-iron in his hand to try to get it onto this par 5 in regulation. 3-iron. Phil wasn't that much further. He had a 4-iron. That's how much this wind's going. It is a long par 5. Very long par 5. It's not one you're really ever getting to into, especially with that elevated green and that false front, and the green then runs away and there's that bunker in the front, which Gary Woodland famously, you know, had that great chip, you know, from and the whole 9 yards. We're getting Gary and I'm rambling now. But Nick couldn't even get there with a 3-iron. He then hits it over. He obviously makes a bogey. Phil misses his birdie putt, which ended up being huge. And then on 16, you know, it's still really close at this point that he chips in on 16.
Yeah,
it's
actually, like, it was 15. So
sorry, 14. Yeah, I'm talking 14 and then 15. Yeah. 15, he chipped in. Yeah. I got up for 2 seconds. I got up. I was like, oh, well, he's got a chip. I walked back. They're on the next tee.
Yeah.
And he's at minus, you know, whatever he ended up finishing at. I'm drawing a blank here.
Yeah, but 19 total.
Yeah, minus 19. I was like, how did, what? So I go back and watch this chip, and just a casual chip in his second of the day. Hold out from the bunker for eagle early in the day, and just very exciting way to win.
Yeah, the neat part with him is that, you know, he got up by 5, stumbled backwards, but he said afterwards in his press conference, he didn't feel like he was hitting bad shots. He felt, you know, it was just the conditions and the way they were. And the cool part about Nick Taylor is he never panics. I mean, you know, Joel Damon, his former teammate, you know, calls him greasy of how he plays. It's just what he does. He just never panics, and he didn't. He has a lot of confidence in himself, and he believes in himself. And he mentioned that several times and, you know, afterwards, and he's said it in many interviews as well. He has a lot of confidence in his abilities. So he didn't get too distracted by playing with Phil, which would a lot of players would. And the thing is, he said, you know what, he's been there before. He had a win in his rookie year, so it's not like it was his first win. It might have been a different situation if it was his first time in contention with a chance to win, getting that big lead. But God loving me, he get that chip in there and then just stuff that shot on 17 and basically put himself in a situation where, you know, he didn't have to take a head cover off on 18. He just, you know, hit an iron down there, another iron down there, another on, and, you know, win by 4.
Absolutely. The thing about Nick Taylor, though, is he's kind of, I don't want to say he's the lost man in Canadian golf. He's now not going to be. But if you think about Canadian golf over the last couple of years, you know, the name, obviously Corey Connors has the big recency bias. Graham Dillette, the years prior, is, you know, he's always there and just that elite ball striker that everyone knows. And then, you know, David Hearn would show up at the Canadian Opens and things like that. And Nick was kind of that fourth guy in the mix over the last couple of years. And this kind of puts him right back to, you know, the top of the status. He's going to go to the Olympics now. That's evident. It would be pretty hard not to at this point, wouldn't you say? What makes you say that?
Well, just as far as rankings are concerned, I mean, you've got to be there as far as those rankings are concerned. He's moved up to 101 in the world, but Connors and Hadwin are still ahead of him.
Well, Adam Hadwin, there's the other one I forgot.
Right. Yeah.
Which there was a good tweet about that, how, you know, there's the world rankings. We're going to talk about the world rankings because there's a big thing that happened within the world rankings this week on 18 that, you know, was majorly costly for one individual. But there was I saw it on Twitter, and I don't have it in front of me, but basically there's Data Golf
right.
that does their kind of world rankings, and then there's the official world rankings.
Correct.
Nick Taylor has the biggest differential of where Data Golf had him prior to this tournament to where he was. It was like 137 spot difference.
Yeah, and theirs is based more on recent stuff. And Matt and Will Crashin, which we'll probably have them on the podcast at some time. They're actually two guys that grew up near Ottawa, and they're Canadians that run that website. But yeah, they have him at 43rd in the world, whereas the official world golf rankings right now have him at 101st.
And prior it was like 202 to like 99. Like it was like a, I remember it's, the math's wrong, but it was like 130 difference or something.
Yeah, I think the thing for Nick is that obviously he had the win. And then basically what's happened the last number of years is that, you know, his best year in there was 93rd on the FedEx Cup points list. But, you know, he basically was right on the line as far as losing his card or losing his status. He was kind of right at that limit. So he wasn't really excelling. If you look, you know, 160 starts, he's got 11 top 10. So, you know, he hasn't had a lot of outstanding play. And I guess that's why he sort of has fell to the side a little bit. But his game has changed in the last couple of years. I mean, you know, he said when we did the interview with him about 8 weeks ago that, you know, he had made the coaching change almost 2 years ago. He's paying attention to other things now. He changed the shot shape that he was hitting. And if you looked at the stats for the week, he was one of the best as far as fairways hits, greens hit in regulation. You know, short of a couple of squirrely shots that he had go left there.
There were a couple of bailouts at
there,
times,
there was.
Too.
And, I mean, his old bad miss was a big hook. And he was certainly...
That,
right. He was certainly controlling a lot better. And then if you looked at strokes gained overall, he was second overall in the end, but very balanced. Again, not one of the longest driving guys, but has a lot of confidence in the game for good reason now. And then obviously now he jumps to 15th in the money list on the PGA Tour, over $1.7 million for the year. Jumps into those big events, $1.404 million he wins for that. He's going to get in the Masters, PGA Championship, Players Championship, Century Tournament of Champions, and he's guaranteed his job for a couple more seasons on top of the current one. So life-changing stuff for him at 31, and it's going to just you know, fuel him and probably free him up maybe a little bit to have a chance to contend for some more.
Yeah, the Masters this year, there's, you know, I think there's four Canadians that are
there.
That
is Hadwin, Connors, Weir, and Taylor. That's
going to be a pretty good practice rounds out there in Augusta, Georgia. Speaking of Canadians, I mean, that's all we've talked about. Terrible transition. I don't care. We have a Canadian on the podcast this week playing out on the Korn Ferry Tour this year. One of the guys that he ended up winning the Order of Merit last year. He was second on the Canadian Tour, currently out on the Korn Ferry Tour, Taylor Pendrith. So we're going to be talking to him in a bit and kind of chat with him about what, you know, watching Nick pick up his win on the PGA Tour. So stick around for that. But I mentioned the official world golf rankings and it playing a huge part on 18 on Sunday. Phil Mickelson needed to make that putt, that birdie putt on the last hole to be tied for second.
Correct.
To get within the top 50 in the official world golf rankings to get him into the WGC and a couple other events going forward. He obviously missed that putt, which was crucial. I think Phil will recover, and what a great week anyway for Phil. But pretty tough to see considering it was like a 4-footer.
Yeah, and you know, as you say, I mean, he's got to do some things to get into the tournaments. We actually talked a couple shows ago about, you know, the majors, and Phil Mickelson is actually not qualified for the U.S. Open right now, of now, at Wingfoot, which, you know, we sort of talked about it as if it was a certainty, and he has said he's not going to take a special exemption if he's offered it. He wants to play his way in there, and, you know, all indications are that if he keeps in the form that he is right now, he's going to do that, and, you know, it would have been nice, I'm sure, to get in that WGC, and he wants to earn his way back there and not have it handed to him, and good on him.
I feel that. It was last podcast I even said, would you be surprised if Phil won the Masters? And then I was watching this and I was like, oh wow, like,
sure,
what a great take. I wonder who said that. But at this point, you know, he's a top 10 at the Masters. Is, you know, it's not out of the question either.
No,
guy's playing well. He's still hitting bombs, as he's been saying. So it was nice to see Phil there until the end. He obviously, you know, you and I were texting once the wind was picking up. We were a little bit worried with Nick, and I said, well, it's not like Phil's known to be this great wind player. He's a high spin player. He plays that fade for most of his shots, which, you know, if the wind's going, that's see you later to that ball. So he struggled in the wind as well. He had terrible distance control throughout the end, which I get it. It's a lot of wind, but, you know, you've been there before. You're 50 years old. You've seen it all. You've won, you know, a British Open or the Open where it's windy as ever. And it was kind of shocking to see him, the vet, get outplayed by Nick in the end.
Yeah, and the thing that really, you know, was the saver, as always, for Phil, is he was number one in strokes gained for around the greens. So it was all came down to short game. And, you know, when we start to talk about majors and where that's important, obviously Augusta is very, very important, and have that creativity and have the ability to hit those recovery shots. And if he can keep doing that, then, you know, we can certainly expect him to get back into those majors.
I wouldn't be surprised in any means. You know, is he playing this week at Riviera? Do you know?
I looked quickly, but I didn't look to see if he is or not. Actually, we should check that one. Actually, the field is a little shorter this week. It's 122. Riviera used to be 132, but they've cut them now into the time as far as the number of players in the field. So there are four Canadians in the field this week. Nick Taylor is scheduled to be in the field. Connors, Hadwin, and Roger Sloan as well. So it would be nice to see Phil there. Obviously, creativity around Riviera is super important. Fantastic golf course. I love this golf course.
Could you, I mean, this is probably a hot take and recency bias, top five 18th hole in all of golf.
You know, we get to know that one really well. It's such a cool amphitheater with the clubhouse up there. It's certainly iconic. It's become a lot more demanding over the years. You obviously have to play up that left side, have an angle into the green, and you've got to hit a great approach into the green.
Oh, absolutely, because you know, it's so slanted. You somehow get stuck up on that hill. The ball's way below your feet as a righty or way above your feet as a lefty. And that clubhouse in the background, it's got that natural amphitheater where everyone's just up there. I mean, maybe I'm being aggressive as saying it's one of the best
18th, but it's great. One of the most memorable ones, and I think unless you've been there and had to walk up those steps to go up to the clubhouse, you don't realize how steep that is, because I can certainly tell you when I was last there 5 years ago, I was pretty winded trying to go up that side. Now, the tee off of one is a little bit steeper, but going into 18 is definitely elevated enough that it makes a big difference on that approach shot in, and there's just something about it. I mean, all the great players in the world have played there. Obviously, there's a history going back with the U.S. Open, with Hogan, just all the celebrities, all the stars around there, everything to do with the event. So I think there's just a certain cachet about it, and the players love to play there as well. It's just a cool design, and, you know, holes like 10 as well, the drivable par 4, you know, it's got some neat stuff.
Yeah, they got a good finishing back 9 that, you know, makes you want to tune in. And, you know, when Tiger is, do you still think of it as Tiger's kind of, you know, championship or Tiger's tournament in a sense?
I mean,
never won it.
No,
but like,
despite, you know, the fact that he hosts, I obviously, a lot of people tie him to it because obviously he made his, you know, debut on the tour there as a teenager. I don't always think of it that way. I connect it more with Ben Hogan. But, you know, I also connect it as well with just, I don't know, it's Hollywood. It really is. I mean, it's not in Hollywood. It's Santa Monica, actually, but or Pacific Palisades, technically. But, I mean, it's just got a certain feel about it. And they're pro, and it's different than, you know, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, for an example, where obviously we have all those stars on TV. In this case, we have all the stars out there. They do play, you know, the Pro-Am, but a lot of them are there just as spectators. Mm-hmm. They just come down to watch the tournament and see it. And you look around as well in that canyon. I mean, Larry David's house is up there. There's tons of different, you know, Hollywood A-list people that have their houses around there. Just a cool place to hang out if you ever get a chance to get there.
Would love to play it one day. If anyone's listening, give us a call. We'll come play. We got to give a guy a call. We got to give Taylor Pendrith a call. We got to chat about the Korn Ferry Tour, his year last year out on the McKenzie Tour, and what it was like seeing Nick Taylor pick up his second win on the PGA Tour this past weekend. Because, you know, those Canadians stick together. You see Michael Glickick right behind the 18th green on Sunday there.
Yep.
Shot him a quick text, just a couple Canadian flags, which he probably ghosted, but it's all good. It's all good, Mike. We'll get back to you one day. Let's hit it up, Taylor Pendrith.
Okay, we'd like to welcome to the podcast Taylor Pendrith, a Canadian who is now playing on the Korn Ferry Tour, excelled greatly on the McKenzie Tour last year, getting 2 wins. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Obviously, you're fresh out of coming out of the South America and Central America swing. I think what you told us just before we came on the air is probably it's probably important for people to hear that, you know, the glitz and the glamour of traveling on the tour is probably not as as great as people think it is, right?
Yeah, definitely not. Yeah, we just finished up 2 weeks in Panama and Colombia. Took a 1 a.m. taxi to the airport this morning for my 4 a.m. flight to Panama. Panama to Orlando, got in about noon, drove over to Sarasota where we are this week, and got here about 4 p.m. So I haven't slept much, but been doing some laundry all night and, yeah, getting fresh for this week.
Life out on the Corn Ferry Tour, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the first half of the season is the first two events are in the Bahamas and then Panama, Colombia. Now we're back in the States for a week. Then we go to Mexico and then we're all in the United States after that. So I'm definitely happy to be back. It was pretty cool over there though. I haven't really spent a whole lot of time down there. You know, it's definitely different. I don't really know any Spanish, so it can be tough to communicate at times. The food is a lot different. The culture is different, but you know, that being said, everybody's super friendly and the countries are beautiful there.
Yeah, Corey touched on that a little bit when he was on the podcast, told a couple different stories about his travels throughout all those countries. Any interesting travel stories or most craziest thing you saw on your little two event stretch?
I think of something that pops to my head, but yeah, we took a shuttle from the airport, probably 30 golfers in you know, one of the transportation vehicles with 30 bags and 30 golf club bags, and it was not very safe, I don't think, but yeah, we managed. I mean, they get things done there, and yeah, it's totally different way of life, I feel like, down there. But it's, yeah, I enjoyed it. I love the golf course in Bogota is fantastic. It's probably one of the best that we play all year. Tons of support from all the local Colombians. You know, it's basically their national open, and it's a big deal down there. So it was pretty fun last week.
So when you're in Panama, I mean, did you get a chance to tour around a little bit, see maybe the old city or anything like that? And the other side, little sidebar there related to your travel. I mean, most people, if they go down and visit Panama, they'll realize quickly that there's a reason rental cars sometimes cost $3 or $4 a day, because you don't really want to drive.
No, definitely not. I would not want to rent a car down there. It's pretty crazy, but they had buses for us, and we stayed somewhere downtown. I'm not exactly sure what part of downtown. Didn't really do too much, you know, sightseeing, I guess. Didn't go down to the old part of Panama, but that was my second time there, and it's a pretty nice city where we stayed. You know, there's a bunch of Americanized restaurants, I would say, but yeah, it's totally different. Like, I haven't played many Latin, PGA Tour Latin events before. I played one this year in Argentina, so that was my first kind of experience of the way of life down there. And so, yeah, you know, I adapted to it, and it was fine. It's, you know, it's a great country, Panama and Colombia. And, yeah, I had fun. Just different for sure. But, yeah, happy to be back.
Yeah, and speaking of being back, this is your second time with status out on the Corn Ferry Tour. You're going to be playing a full season, the last time in 2016, and over the last couple of years you've been out on the Mackenzie Tour, and last year had quite a successful year. Let's take it back. What changed last year? Obviously, you know, you went from winning around $40,000 the year prior. Last year picked up $125,000, ended up back on the Corn Ferry Tour this year. So what were you working on? What changed? Is there something you learned between seasons that just got you more prepared?
Yeah, I feel like when I first got out on the Corn Ferry Tour in 2016, you know, I was a rookie out there, and there was a lot of adjustments, you know, just getting comfortable. There's new golf courses, new cities, new players, You know, and I got off to a pretty good start that year, finished tied for fourth in the second event of the year, and kind of battled some injuries on and off that whole year. But I kind of found, you know, myself watching how other players were practicing, and almost kind of felt guilty if I wasn't on the range for, you know, 2 to 4 hours a day. So last year I just kind of got back to the way how I used to, you know, go about the game you know, figured out what works for me and what doesn't work. Not saying that I don't practice hard, but for me, maybe it's, you know, an hour on the range and 30 minutes on the putting green, or, you know, walking 9 holes on a Monday instead of, you know, grinding it out on the range. It just works better for me. And so this year in Canada, I kind of did my own thing, I guess, and found myself having a lot of fun on the golf course and off the golf course with my buddies. And I got a great caddy, Mitch, who I kind of grew up with. We just had a lot of fun and kind of got back to, you know, what golf is all about. And it's fun. It's a game. It's a job, I guess, for me now. But it's still, at the end of the day, it's a game and it should be fun. So just kind of got back to doing that. And, yeah, it was a great year.
What was the feeling that you had last year? I mean, you only missed 2 cuts on the Mackenzie Tour last year, and you had 6 top 10s. How did you feel, you know, that did you feel sort of invincible almost? The fact that, you know, you'd go out there every week and you'd be in contention?
Yeah, I guess a little bit. I mean, I had a good run there, probably 4 or 5 events in a row. You know, I think I shot 62 3 or 4 times. But getting that first win in Edmonton was big for, you know, my confidence. I've been close in the past on the Mackenzie Tour, and just never kind of broke through and got a win. And, that really helped me for my second win in Montreal, just knowing, you know, the feelings and the emotions, kind of how to control your nerves and all that. You know, realizing that I can win if I play how I'm capable of. And, so I felt like, you know, I approached every week as I'm going to try to win this tournament. You know, I'm going to play aggressive. That's how I play my best golf, when I play aggressive. And, it worked out. Had a lot of good low rounds this year. And, like I said, I had a ton of fun.
Montreal, not a bad place to celebrate after a win, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I celebrated in the passenger seat, driving back, because we had a tournament the next week. So
classic Canadian tour.
It was good though. We had some fun.
You touched on your caddy, Mitch. Pretty rare to have a full-time caddy out on the Mackenzie Tour in the first place. A lot of guys grinding with local scrubs like myself from week to week. How long have you guys been working together, and how hard was that for him to be out there on the Mackenzie Tour when the checks really aren't that big for yourself? So it's, you know, what's his eating scenario even? Is he even eating most days?
Well, he's a big boy, so he needs a lot of food. But I grew up, you know, with him. His cousin is my best friend, and he actually used to caddy for me, Ryan Brown, and now Mitch is caddying for me all last year and this year as well. And he's great. He was a hockey player. He played in the OHL. He played for Niagara Ice Dogs and Barry Colts, and got drafted by the Islanders, played a couple of years over in Europe, and then he was home in the summer, and I needed a guy, and he came and caddied for me, and we worked really well together, and he's never been on the bag for a missed cut, so that's pretty cool for him. And he's awesome, you know, keeps things loose out there, and we're great friends and travel together most weeks. And So he's having a lot of fun, and kind of decided that he didn't want to play hockey, I guess, anymore over in Europe. Was with me all summer and had a pretty successful run this summer. He did miss Edmonton, though, and he missed another one because he was at the NHL Ref Combine. But he's back now, and he's great. We're having a good time.
No, you've had a lot of people, like you said, you've got some friends, some different people that are kind of a support network around you. One guy that you've become friends with that we've had on this podcast is Jeremy Taggart, the former drummer for Our Lady Peace. Could you tell us maybe a little bit of how you two connect and how important it is to have people like that sort of around you and supporting you as well?
Yeah, Tags, he's a beauty. He is awesome. He loves golf. You know, he lives in Richmond Hill where I grew up, and got to know him really well this summer. You know, we probably played, I don't know, 10 or 15 rounds of golf, I'd say, this summer. And, you know, he texts me all the time, follows me, which is really cool because, you know, music's always been a part of my life. My dad is an amazing guitar player. Played in bands his whole life, and he still plays gigs occasionally now, but so I have a great appreciation for musicians and, you know, the music that they can produce. So it's pretty neat to have a guy like Tags to hang out with and play golf with, and we usually have the same foursome. It's, you know, myself, Tags, my caddy Mitch, and Ryan Strom, who plays for the Rangers. Him and Mitch are played in Niagara together, so we have a ton of laughs out there, and it's a good time. But yeah, no, he's definitely a fan. I'd say he follows, you know, every tournament that I play and texts me all the time. But yeah, no, he's just a beauty. Great guy.
He's absolutely one of our favorites. He not strong opinionated at all. Is there anything you guys just don't see eye to eye on, and that just you know, you're on the golf course, maybe he's having a good round, and that's just the way you can just jab him a little bit?
he's some things that he says, I just kind of laugh and don't challenge him, but he's a funny dude. He says some great things, and we have a ton of laughs together, and it's yeah, he's just a beauty. This is the one way to describe him.
How much do you guys talk about baseball? Because obviously he's got a baseball background, and you do as well. Was that part of the relationship as well, having that sort of common bond?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, he obviously played baseball growing up, and so did I, so it's pretty neat to, you know, just, I don't know, we would just talk about pitching and growing up playing baseball and just basically everything. I mean, he's a good buddy now, and yeah, can't wait to play another round with him at some point. That's hopefully soon.
Well, he's got this big album dropping, so you know, maybe he might not have time for you. Yeah, exactly. Go listen to it; it's hilarious. Let's talk some Canadian golf. Big week for Canadian golf with Nick Taylor picking up a win at the AT&T. Were you able to check that out? And, you know, what inspiration are you drawing from that?
Yeah, it was awesome to see. You know, I was following it all week. We tried to watch the back nine, but there was a thunderstorm in Columbia and the TVs went out, so didn't get to see him win. But yeah, obviously super pumped for him. He's you know, playing great, obviously, and to go wire to wire and win is just fantastic, especially at Pebble Beach and with Phil breathing down his neck. It was pretty cool to see, and I think he'll get some more wins coming soon, hopefully.
Obviously, you're close with Mac and Corey, you know, all having gone to Kent State as well. But, you know, if you know, you're sitting back and you're watching the success of, you know, Mac and Hadwin and Corey and Nick, obviously, and then, you know, obviously Mike won at Panama as well last year. What's it mean to you to see that? And does that give you any sort of extra inspiration to kind of get out there and join them?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I've played a ton of rounds of golf with all those guys. You know, I've beat them, you know, a bunch of times as well. So the, you know, number one goal for this past year was to move up to the Korn Ferry Tour and just kind of embrace that. Okay, I'm on the Mackenzie Tour. It's a great place to play. It's a development tour to move up to the Korn Ferry Tour. And then from there, you can move up to the big tour. So it's just, you know, it's a process. Everybody's path's different. And, you know, for me, it's taking a little longer, but that's fine. I'm okay with it. And, you know, just trying to get better each day and have some good results. And, you know, hopefully in the next year or two or three, I can move up and play with those guys. Because, yeah, it'd be a lot of fun to be out there with them.
Quick question. I mean, obviously you're known very much for how far you hit the ball. So for anybody who hasn't seen Taylor hit a golf ball, you definitely want to do it. You might not want to stand next to a range or next to him at a range and watch him hit it. I think I did that one year in Bondhead in the Team Canada event. I think I was stuck between you and Corey, and you guys were trying to have a long drive contest, and well, that was embarrassing for me. Coming out of Bogota there, where you just had an event where it had very diverse two golf courses, a very long one and a very short one. There's a lot of discussion right now about thoughts about distance and course obsolescence and things like that. But, you know, how did you find, playing a 6,200-yard golf course and then playing a 7,500-yard golf course?
Yeah, it's I had never played that short course before. I played it once in the Pro-Am. Before on Wednesday, but 6,200 yards at 9,000 feet, so it plays about 5,400 yards.
Wow,
which is kind of crazy, but you know what? It's challenging. It's I started on the big course, which is 7,200 or 7,300, and scored better on the big course than the short course, which is, if you look at the scorecard, you're like, okay, well, all these par fours are 380 at 15%. I can hit driver on every single green if I wanted to, but they put the pins in some tricky spots. And if you hit it good, you could score well, but you really had to manage your game. And, you know, some holes I would hit 6-iron off the tee just because I needed to hit a full wedge to spin it and keep it on the right level, and as opposed to trying to drive it close to the green and, you know, making a bogey instead of hitting a wedge to the middle of the green, making four at worst. So it was pretty cool though. You had to really think out there, and you know, the scores were not as low, I think, as people were expecting on the short course. But you know, that just proves that length's not everything.
So in those conversations with you and Mitch, who's the aggressive one? Who's the guy that's like, well, you know, that's I can get there with the driver. You know, you're getting there with the driver. Or is he the guy handing you the 6-iron, breaking the driver over his knee? Like, who's the aggressive one? Who's the one holding the other guy back?
I'd say I'm probably the aggressive one.
Well, if I hit a 380, I would be too, but
yeah, no, but you know, we're kind of on the same page, I think, for the most part. I'm driving the ball a lot better than I have been in previous years. So I like to take advantage of my length, but like I said, on that course, like sometimes it didn't matter. You could hit a pitching wedge off the tee and the other guy could hit driver and you could beat him on the hole. It was very tricky. Had to really hit it straight, and you know, it's an old, super old golf course, so the trees are massive and it was firm and tight, and so you had to think, but pretty good job of course management over the past year and a half, and try to figure out, you know, the best way to make birdies, and sometimes that's laying back, hitting a 4-iron instead of a driver, but for the most part I'd say I'm on the aggressive side and, you know, like to hit drivers if I'm feeling it.
I love it. You've played in two Canadian Opens this year. This year. Yeah, that makes sense. There's been two already. Two Canadian Opens in your life in 2014 and 2015. This year is where I was getting at, Scott. Is kind of in your backyards in St. George's in Toronto. Any plans to try to qualify for it this year?
Out there and played actually for the first time this summer with tags, and yeah, it's a sweet golf course. It's, you know, my style. I like the old school kind of tree line courses. A lot of drivers out there, I think, for myself when I played it. So I'd love to get a chance to play in that and you know, kind of compete on national level for the, you know, our national open is always pretty cool, and I haven't played in a few years, so it'd be great to get in the field this year and compete.
So if you're offered an exemption as a Korn Ferry Tour player, one of the exemptions, what will be the factors for you? I mean, you're obviously going to be at a point in the season where you're going to have a look at where you are on the money list, but, you know, if you do get offered that spot, you know, which way do you lean? Do you try and play that and take your shot on the PGA Tour, or do you sort of say, I don't know, maybe I should play this week on the Korn Ferry Tour and make some money?
Yeah, that'll have to be a decision when it gets closer, but I would say I would love to play in the Canadian Open. Everybody, you know, every Canadian golfer would love to play in the Canadian Open, and it's just a super cool event. But yeah, if I'm in a, hopefully I'm not in that spot where I have to choose and have some good weeks coming up in the next few months, but we'll see how it goes. I'd love to play again in the Canadian Open and have a chance to, you know, compete with the big boys and see how I stack up. But we'll have to see how the summer goes, but I'm hoping to play there for sure.
Well, we'd certainly like to see you there as well. I know you haven't had a lot of sleep today, as you mentioned. It's been a long, long day, so we appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we can catch up with you again later in the season as well and maybe get a bit of an update. And hey, maybe we'll see you at St. George's as well. So thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it. And good luck this week in Florida and the season ahead.
Right on. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you, Taylor, for that interview. He's down in Florida now. Tough travel is it on that Korn Ferry Tour, man, during this little stretch?
It really is. And, I mean, for those guys to be able to go do that, plus play well, you know, they got to deal with everything that goes on outside of that. I think people just don't realize that. They think about pro golfers, and they think about, oh, I'm just going to the golf course, and I'm going to play my round or whatever. But, I mean, travel in some of those places is just something else. And, you know, as he says, you know, he hadn't had any sleep. Really since, you know, yesterday, and he's just got to get his laundry done. And yeah, so you feel for them, and that's just part of the life.
Absolutely. Speaking of hard travel,
yeah,
the LPGA headed over to Australia.
Oh, yeah.
They obviously had plans to go elsewhere after that.
They did.
Not only that, they dealt with some crazy weather in Australia. You know, they closed down surfing areas.
Yeah.
Which you don't hear of. Like, people surf in Lake Ontario when it's bad weather.
Yeah.
Because it's the only time you could. They close down surfing areas in Australia. That's unheard of.
Yeah, the Vic Open was on, which is the event that is held. They have the women's and the men's event concurrently, and it was at 13th Beach Links this year. And the weather was so bad on Saturday and Sunday. I don't know if you saw some of the coverage. I was up watching some of it.
I saw Nate walk by with Hannah making a big putt. Yeah,
flags were going sideways. I mean, the golf course was playing firm and fast. There was balls running out 75 yards. Elena Sharp put together quite a round on the Saturday. She was out early, shot 2 under in the terrible weather. Unfortunately, you know, it got to her on Sunday. She shot 5 over in the fourth round. Still ended up with a top 10 finish, which was her 14th top 10. But yeah, the winds were so bad that they actually closed down the beaches for surfing. It was just so dangerous. But yeah, those golfers were still out there anyways.
Yeah, and then obviously they head all the way over to Australia. The plan from there is to do the Asian swing after this. That has now been canceled after, you know, the coronavirus that has broke out. And the LPGA has released a statement about that. And, you know, the TLDR is really just, you know, fear of the coronavirus. Right. Want to make sure their players are safe and healthy. And that's the PR part, right? The hard part about it is it's a major market for the LPGA Tour.
Very much.
Huge. And they're losing tons and tons of money, but they're doing the right thing in this situation. But it's still hard. You know, a lot of these players, these are some of the bigger purses they have each year too.
Yeah, they really are. And you've got to remember that, you know, some of the LPGA players obviously started in, you know, Florida. They played the event there. Some of them went to Australia, but not a lot of them. And a lot of them, you know, sort of did that. Some of them are playing the Australian Open this week. And then, you know, they expect to play those three Asian tours, you know, swing events. And, you know, Brooke Henderson, Canadian, for an example, she was not playing in Australia this year, so she was going to play that swing. We're not going to see her now and the rest of the LPGA Tour.
She's off for like 6 weeks or something ridiculous.
Now the tour won't come back now till March 19th, the Founders Cup, the Volvic Founders Cup in Phoenix. So it's quite a gap for the players, quite an adjustment. As you said, it's the right thing for them to do for a lot of different reasons, but for the tour to have to all of a sudden bail on three events, That's very difficult for a lot of people, players, caddies. I mean, you know, we talk about caddies and stuff all the time.
We're a big caddy podcast.
Yeah. And I mean, you think about that, those big purse events, that's their chance to make some significant money, especially early in the year, because you got to remember the LPGA Tour is a little different than the PGA Tour. You know, they don't have as many events late in the fall. There's not that big wraparound season. So, you know, they've got expenses too. And then all of a sudden, boom, you don't have events for a little while. It certainly could change up some things. And it is unfortunate. But yes, the events in Thailand are going to be canceled. And they had already canceled the Blue Bay China event as well.
Well, it's I like what the tour is doing in the sense. In the sense of they're not worried about the money, right? It's like, this is the right thing. That makes sense. So
it's people that matter.
Yeah. And these are, you know, these are friends of ours that we don't want them dealing with that. You know, it is a deadly virus for some people, and it's, you know, take it seriously. So let's get away from it.
Yeah. And there was a number of players that were already canceling their plans to go over anyways. They, you know, they just said, no way, I'm not going over there. So again, it just makes sense. It's just unfortunate now for the spectators, for the fans. They're not going to see any LPGA golf now after this Australian Open until late March.
A couple other interesting stories coming out in the world of golf. This is one that you kind of made me privy to, is Bryson DeChambeau was named top 25 in the Sports Illustrated's fittest athletes.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. Like, if you actually, like, I get that he named it, but I don't believe it.
You know what? It's such a joke. And I mean, unfortunately, you know what? Sports Illustrated has been gutted in recent years with their media staff, their writers, all sorts of things. It's become a shell of the publication that it once was. And, you know, polls like this do not lend to their credibility. I know they're just trying to, for some reason, trying to include a token golfer in there. But I was just having a conversation with some other friends in the industry, and we came up with, you know, probably 15 fitter golfers.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, automatically, whether it be a Camilla Vajegas or Scott Stallings. I mean, there's a ton
Rory
of...
McIlroy. Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, Brooks won it last... Or he was in that list last year, but he was 25th on the list. But the funny part here in this list is you look at Bryson. He's number 24 on the list. The guy just ahead of them is the runner who broke the two-hour mark for the marathon.
Which, you know, wasn't held for, you know, years and years.
Ever.
And, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. That doesn't make sense.
So
you know?
If you're sitting there and saying, and, you know, it becomes sort of like a, you know, the credibility of a golf course ranking list. I mean, the more that you have, you know, people on there and make you question, you know, what the credibility of the list is, then it just blows the rest of it apart. And it's just unfortunate because, it's great that they have a golfer involved, but just because Bryson picked up a weight 5 months ago and started throwing around does not make him one of the fittest athletes in the world.
Yeah, that's the thing. He literally started working out crazy, as you said, 5 months ago. It's funny because the photo of him that they posted, I'm looking at it. He looks like me. Like, and I try to go to the gym every single day, but I'm never winning. I'm not winning top 25 in this basement. There's just you and I.
We're talking world fittest.
I know.
You know, it's not fittest at Bryson's house.
So you're saying, like, as you said, you probably were naming a bunch of other golfers.
Sure.
And you and I could sit here and name, you know what you could do? You could grab any NHL team, even a team with Phil Kessel on it, who's not an athlete in the sense of his body type, and they're gonna be fit. Here's the thing about Bryson, though. Let's get it back to golf for a second. Since his return of being, you know, I got a six-pack, Brooks Koepka, listen to me, everyone pay attention, I'm fit, I've gained 30 pounds, blah, blah, blah. He's only played once.
Yep.
He barely made the cut,
yeah.
And he finished T50 at the Waste Management Open. Now, the Waste Management Open, I don't think, is a tournament Bryson could really handle in the sense of the crowd, and he's kind of...
But he played over in Dubai as well, and all he did was chop around in the rough all the time. I mean, he was trying to hit these monster drives everywhere, but you find out really quickly, golf is more than just that. As much as people will talk about it online, and they'll say, oh, you know, it's a bomb and gouge game, I mean, Pebble Beach is a great example. I tweeted that out today, that... of the top eight players, only two of them were in the top 25 for driving distance. Six of the top eight were in the top 25 for putting, as far as strokes gained. So it makes a big difference. You got to put the ball in the hole. So bash it as far as you want, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee you're going to have a lot more success.
Also, like, what was he worried about? He's won, what, five times on the PGA Tour in the last 3 years?
Yeah.
Why do you need to gain 200 to be 220 pounds?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his strategy is. And I mean, you know, everybody's got the right, if they want to be, have, you know, more fitness level and stronger and whatever, help yourself and go at it. But, you know, for Sports Illustrated to put him in that list, and really, if you go through the list, you know, there's triathletes, ultra marathon runners, track and field athletes. I mean, world-class athletes. No offense to golfers, but, you know, I've been involved with all sorts of different athletics and all sorts of different sports. I mean, I've seen, you know, world-class skiers in a fitness lab, and you watch the VO2 max on them and their ability to, for their fitness levels and on how they can utilize oxygen in their muscles. I mean, it's incredible. And you could take every single skier that's on the World Cup circuit, and they're still going to be fitter than him. So this becomes, unfortunately, a fluffy little thing. And, you know, as I said, SI loses its credibility here. And, you know, I'd rather them just not include a golfer.
You know what I would have loved? Here's how Sports Illustrated
gets back. Do you want Phil Mickelson in there?
I want Kevin Stadler at 25.
May as well.
You may as well. Why not? You know, if you're like the, I'm looking at the list here. I'm looking at the list here. I'm giving way too much credit. And we're just basically plugging another publication. But we got guys like Aaron Donald of Los Angeles Rams. You know, amazing. Yeah. You know, one of Rookie of the Year, everything along those lines. We got triathletes. We got, I don't even know what ultra running is, but we got ultra running. They got the
they
poles.
They run really, really far.
Yeah, and they go up like mountains with these like sticks with swords on the end. we got basketball players, you know, soccer players.
Yeah.
Again, what the heck is an ultra runner? It doesn't matter. You got Conor McGregor. Like these are guys that are actually athletes. This screams PR to me.
It does.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Another guy that's, you know, come up this week is Rory McIlroy. He's now going to jump back to the number one. Obviously, we talked about this last week. Does it really matter, though?
I don't know. I mean, you know, he has a do not start because obviously he didn't play this week.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets the list or gets up to number one. And that's obviously, we've talked about the, you know, the 2-year ranking system and how people will fall off based on results previous or whatever. Does it matter? I think it matters to people that have not been there before. Because obviously from a financial standpoint, maybe for their ego standpoint, for a lot of, you know, tangible reasons, it might make a big difference in their lifestyle. For a guy like Rory, who's been there before, I don't know if psychologically that's his, you know, that's what really pushes him along. Some guys might do it, and they, you know, and same on the women's side as well. They sit back and say, I want to be number one in the world for whatever reason, and that's fine. Does it matter? Probably not, because in a lot of cases they can't do a lot about it except go out and play well and then hope that the ranking system works well enough that it puts them high up on the list.
Absolutely. And, you know, Rory is playing this week.
He is.
At Riviera. And we touched about how we love this golf course. I'm going to get to watch this tournament from the beach. I'm heading to Mexico. So I'm just going to post up at the sports bar on Sunday.
Perfect.
Going to have some tequila. I may just ask them to bring the bottle to wherever I'm sitting. I'm just going to watch Riviera. I'm hoping Rory and Tiger final group, gutting it out. And I, you know, I don't even need to be at the beach. I'll love that. It's going to be great. So look forward to that. So that means you're all alone next week.
Oh, that'll be okay. I'll find somebody to hang out with. How's that?
How about that? Well, we still got a couple more segments. We got our birdie and bogey. It's coming back this week. We haven't done that in a few weeks. We got our mailbag. The mailbag was flying today. We had to like cut people out of the mailbag.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to hit birdie or bogey, and then we're going to hit the mailbag. We got the tip with the coach, and we're going to wrap it up. All right. Birdie or bogey is back, folks. This is the game that has no winners. It's basically, we're going to give it a take. You're going to say whether you like it with a birdie, or you're going to say you hate it with a bogey. We have had a couple eagles. You only get one a show. So if you're going to use an eagle, you got to be very, very choosy with it. And we don't have doubles. We only have quadruple bogeys. So if you really, really hate something, that's where you're going. All right. So our first birdie or bogey here is stroke play skins events where people pick up once the best they can make is a par. Where did this happen, Scott, that you came up with this?
I was actually playing the event I mentioned down at Winter Park in Florida where we played the Tensum during the PGA show. And the way they run their skins game so that it moves along because they have 60-plus players in five groups is that basically, you know, if you can't make a birdie or an eagle, you just pick it up and it moves things along. I mean, that's all it's going to, it takes that to win a skin anyways. So there's not really much point. So for me, it's a birdie because I love how it moves. I mean, you're not going to play that way every day, but it makes for a fun event.
I think it's very, you know, specific in the,
it is very specific.
And when you're playing it. So this is a short course. You have pretty much, you know, every par four is a drivable par four, you know, maybe save one or two of them.
Sure.
So I get it in that sense. You're playing intense, I'm sure. But, you know, when you're playing, you know, a big event, a full-size golf course, I don't know if it necessarily makes sense. But if it is just a skins game you're out there for, you are right in a sense that pars aren't going to win it if you have more than 10 people, I would assume, depending on who you play with. If you're playing with a bunch of hacks, then maybe that's a different story. And maybe a bogey wins it, which maybe skins isn't the game for you. So in this situation, it's a birdie. I think it's a cool idea.
All right.
So our next birdie or bogey, the European Tour had kind of in the news in the last couple weeks. So a European Tour player was running in his final round to set a speed record. He was obviously playing by himself based on how the cut panned out. Some tournaments, such as the Masters, they'll have a marker, a guy that goes out and plays with you. Not in this case. You've seen Kevin Na do this in the past on the PGA Tour. I don't have the numbers in front of me of his record. Do you think this is a birdie or a bogey?
It doesn't bother me at all. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, I mean, I saw a lot of people criticizing it on social media and say, you know, it disrespects the game and all sorts. I was sort of lost on that one. But here's the thing. Once that player is in last place, and you can look at most tours, it's very difficult for them to move up. They could shoot a course record, and chances are they're going to maybe win a few more $1,000. That's about it. Is it disrespectful? Not really. I mean, it's their choice. I mean, who knows? Maybe they changed their flight and they want to get around there. It's something fun. I mean, I'm sure the spectators loved it as well. I don't see an issue with it, so it's a birdie by me.
It's a bogey for me because I got the caddy background in a sense, and that sounds miserable. And it sounds miserable into it. Hey, I'm doing it if you're tipping me. Like, if there's a tip on it, but that's horrible. It's already enough to carry that golf bag around. Are we playing with, like, half the club?
I don't know.
Are we taking out the umbrella? Are we taking out this? Like, this sounds.
I think they had a light bag, so I think they put a little
but
stand
still,
bag.
It's still. It's just for, you know, your own vanity. The caddy gets zero credit at the end of the day. And he's probably losing money. You said, like, you know, it's a couple extra $1,000. Yeah, that's a couple extra $100 for a guy that's grinding out. Especially on the European Tour, the purses aren't necessarily as big. Travel's a little bit cheaper, though. But still, it's a bogey for me in that sense. Is it funny to watch? Sure. But at the end of the day, you're only mentioning one name on there, and that's the golfer. When in this situation, it's almost the caddy that has the harder job. So, it's a bogey for you.
Good angle. I like that.
Another one, you obviously came across a couple dogs on the golf course when you were down in Florida. You mentioned dogs being on the golf course when you went to a short course in California. A lot of travel for you in some nice places recently. not that I can complain by any means.
Mr. Mexico.
But... Yeah. Dogs on golf courses. Is this a birdie or a bogey for you?
Birdie for me. I have no issues with it. If it's not a safety issue or you don't have a, you know, you don't end up with a dog that's maybe vicious or something like that. If people are just bringing them along, they've got them on a leash or something like that and just walking with them, I have no issue with them having a dog out on the golf course.
I agree. It's birdie for me. I would love to bring my dog. The problem with my dog is I'd hit a drive and she'd go get it. And then now I don't have a golf ball. If it's on a leash and I think it's probably one of my favorite parts of my day. Our greenskeeper out at my local course, he always has his dog out there with him. When it has its frisbee and wants to play with you, and it's just a fun part of your morning. Usually, you know, if you're one of the first couple groups out, you're gonna run into it, you know, pet a dog. And if you hate seeing a dog when you're out on the golf course, which is already, you're probably in a bad mood at some point, now you come across a dog.
Yeah,
what's wrong with that? You're the worst if you're giving this a bogey. That's how I'm taking that.
All right.
So recently this came out on Twitter, the Ritz-Carlton Orlando, the golf course, is now charging players $10 extra if they want to walk the golf course. Now, I don't know this golf course. I don't know if it's one where there's like 15-minute gaps in between holes or anything. What is your take on this whole thing? $10 just to say I'm healthy.
Yeah, you know what? Not a fan. I mean, as you said, I get it from some designs certainly need carts because they're created with a lot of space between the holes. But, you know, for the average golf course to be charging extra for it, maybe they just need to raise their green fee and kind of bury it in within the price, but it looks bad.
But why? It's, why would they need to do that? Because they're not, it doesn't change anything. They're actually saving money. They're not pushing, they're not losing any money. That one group, if they all four are walking, they're not losing a tee time at the end of the day because they're losing everything. It's almost, I mean, I'm sure there's stats out there. If nobody's in front of you or there are people in front of you, it's probably just as fast to walk if there aren't those gaps between holes.
Yeah, I don't understand the logic behind it. It really mystifies me. I mean, even from a marketing perspective, I think it's a bad look. Again, I haven't looked into it, but just from the perception of, you know, charging people $10 extra to walk, I mean, that's double bogey territory.
Oh, absolutely. This is a max out almost, you know, like this is a pickup DQ.
Double net DQ
is what I'm calling it, which doesn't make sense because they're two different things, but I'm calling it the double net DQ. This is horrible.
Yeah.
This is trash. This is embarrassing. This is a golf course I will never play now if I know this, because that's... I hope they're not listening.
It's just a weird attitude to have for a golf course.
Yeah, it's not like you get extra value out of it. Maybe their thought is like, oh, they'll come back. Think about it this way: if I'm walking, I'm using more energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So at the end of the round,
chances are
I'm probably hungrier.
There you go.
And guess what? Now I'm going to go spend some money in your clubhouse, and now I'm going to sit there. And I don't know about you. I love walking. I do take a cart if it's available. You know,
this is not a cheap golf course, but they're now chiseling the guest for $10 extra.
I personally like walking more if I don't have to carry the bag. Like if you have a caddy, is a game changer, but. It's you get to see the golf course more. You spend some time. You have more time between shots. If I'm spending a lot of money on a golf course, which you said, I want that walking experience a lot of the time. So absolutely, double, triple, quadruple, DQ, equitable stroke control, bogey, however you want to take it, it's awful. One more. This is a cool story. I just gave away my thought.
Apparently, yeah.
Cabot Links is...
Do you want to play some poker? You got a little bit of a tell there.
Maybe. Cabot Links, they're creating this new...
Yeah, it's scheduled to open later this year. They're going to have a little bit of a preview. So it's their short course. It's called The Nest. It's a 10-hole golf course. And basically what's happened is I just heard through a source today that it seems they're out searching for some hickory shafted clubs, some sets to use for the, you know, to offer to the guests to make use of. I think it's really interesting, actually, as someone who owns a hickory set, has played hickory golf before. I think it's a neat option. So if they're offering them as rentals or maybe they're free, I don't know what the situation is, but I know, you know, apparently it seems that some of their key staff are out searching for sets for their use later on in the year. Maybe it's for a special event. I don't know for sure. But if it's for a regular use, regular rental, I think it's a nice option for golfers to kind of do a little bit of a throwback and to be able to try out some hickory shafted clubs over their short course.
So it's a birdie for you.
So it is a birdie for me.
It's a birdie for me, but I have a fear. I have a little bit of fear. This is a resort, right? So you're going to get some guys out there that, you know, maybe having a few drinks and you know, golf is frustrating. And maybe they're not treating the golf clubs the way they should be treated. I have a fear that, you know, these are hickory clubs. If they got guys that, if they're calling you, they're like, hey, who's the oldest guy in golf we know that's going to have going to have hickories called? But that means, like, they're very serious about this. They're looking for these hickory sets. Yeah. I'm just fearful of, you know, some idiot ruining it for everyone.
Yeah, well, the thing is, what people don't realize as well is, you know, you can fix these things. So I've had them snap. I've lent them to people and said, just go ahead.
Still create wood.
You can still, there are still people that actually reshaft hickory shafted golf clubs, and you can have them done. So you just basically say, you know what, just go ahead and use them. Don't worry about it. In most of these cases, these are what we'd call common clubs. They're not, you know, big collector clubs. They might be 100 years old, but, you know, they're very common to find. So they're not worth a lot of extra, you know, they're not like some big collector set. So if something happens, and it will happen, they don't have to be angry for it to happen. They can actually just, you know, it can just happen by accident. It's fine that way. But yeah, it's fun. It really is. And if you haven't done it before, have you tried hickory before?
I have not hit one in a long time. Okay. So maybe we have a fun challenge at the Flagstaff Open on that first tee. I'm just going to... I'm going to hint at that. Maybe we'll talk about that off air at some point, but all I'm right. looking forward to it. But absolute birdie for me. I got to get out to Cabot. I think this summer, maybe take a drive. You got 15 hours to drive down there at some point with me?
You know what? To go to Cabot Links, I would definitely try to find the time.
Let's do it. You know what else we should do?
What's
we should hit the mailbag.
All right, let's do it.
Let's hit the mailbag. All right, Scotty, you opened up the mailbag today. We had some great questions. Saw some on Twitter. Saw some on Instagram. What did we get?
We had some weird ones today, but that's okay. And when I say weird, I mean interesting, which is really what I like. So
I like weird. Yeah. I like more. Hey, everyone listening.
The more obscure, the better.
Send me weird questions. Scott might not answer them, but I will.
All right. Sounds good. So someone asked, what is Brad Fritch doing for 2020? Now, Brad Fritch is a former guest on here, former PGA Tour player, Korn Ferry Tour player, and spent some time as well in the Mackenzie Tour event, originally from Manotick, Ontario. So this listener asked, does he have any status on the Korn Ferry Tour?
Yeah. So he tweeted this out. To our to our public account, and I just replied. You know,
I saw that.
I bet Brad will answer this for you because Brad's you know, he's a beauty. He's on Twitter
for sure.
He likes to stir things up, and he's probably fighting with somebody in DM somewhere about who knows what, the Ottawa Senators being a real hockey team or something like that. And he basically said, yes, I will answer directly. I'm a member of the Korn Ferry Tour, but so far down the list that I'll never get straight into an event. I'll be Monday qualifying a lot. Once I get in and make a check, I'll reshuffle and start to get in each week. So a couple things that came out of that for me. When I get into an event and make a check. Love that.
Yeah.
I love
when.
That. Exactly. Yeah.
Not if.
Not if. When. I love that. Brad's been around the block. He's been there before. He's won on the Korn Ferry Tour. He's had PGA Tour status. This is a guy that's still confident at some point earlier this year.
At all. This is the guy who stepped up next to Tiger Woods when there was an open spot one year at San Diego at Torrey Pines. I mean, he basically looked over and saw nobody was sitting, you know, nobody's hitting balls next to him on the driving range. And he said to his caddy, let's go.
Yeah, why not?
I love it.
Yeah, so he'll be back. I know Brad's kind of semi-retired. He's kind of, you know, figuring out some things, but he's still trying to Monday qualify when it makes sense for him and his family. And he's going to get into an event, and he will do well, and he's working on his game and set things up and changing his swing, as, you know, he kind of talked about. And it's a grind. We've talked about it. Brad gets it of anybody. He's probably got the best thought process on the game of golf, especially professional golf, that I've heard of from a PGA Tour.
Yeah, he's a smart guy, and we'll look forward to seeing him getting in those events and making those checks.
Absolutely.
All right, another question here. What is your favorite golf club that you ever owned?
Oh,
wow, that's
cool.
A big one.
Was it your first hickory set from back in 1908?
my hickory set is a set of 1916. So it was my high school set. See, I got to it before you did.
Second time around. my favorite is a... I have a Scotty Cameron putter. It's been in my bag for forever. It comes and goes. I got another one, and kind of talked about this with Rob Miller on Twitter about putters and fitting of putters and
right.
going back and forth. I have, like, this is one that's purely fit for me. It's got my last name stamped on the heel and toe, so it's my last name's Tiedorf, but it says The Dorf on it. It's the gamer. It's my baby. It's always in
the... You just go back to it?
I go back to it. Something goes, and then I got one that's on the other end of thing. So it's that. The only other club I'm back, but it's not my favorite, is this three wood that I can't find another one I hit better, but it's far from my favorite. My three wood is not my best club. So easily my favorite club of all time is a Scotty Cameron Newport 2. It was black. It's kind of turned into a gray from using it so much and fading. And
that happens over time, too.
Yeah, well, at least you have hair to go.
There you go. All right. Actually, for myself, it's actually a putter as well. I've got an old Scottsdale Answer that, you know, it doesn't go back into my bag too often. I just kind of bring her out and putt with it every now and then. And it literally, I have not had it in the bag for a tournament round in probably 15 years. But I love the original Answers. I love that Scottsdale Answer with the sound slot in it. There's just something about it as far as the look and the heritage of it or whatever. And certainly owned a lot of golf clubs over the years, but that seems to be one that that never leaves my office.
Are you a sentimental guy about objects, though?
I wouldn't say. I would say I'm a bit of a pack rat regarding golf stuff. But the funny part is I could have it around for, you know, 10 years and then begin to wonder, why is it there? And then just toss it. So,
but I'm like that with, like, everything.
Okay.
Like, nothing really holds tons of sentimental value for me.
Yeah.
So that when people say, like, you know, what's your favorite? Like, I don't hold...
Yeah.
If somebody offered me the right amount of money, like, it's not even that much for my putter. I'd probably sell it. That's just, yeah. I don't know. It takes a special person to hang on to, like, oh, this was my 8-iron that I hit my first hole in one.
I'm the
with,
same way. I'm not that way as well. Either,
exactly. So yeah. maybe we're not the best for the answer, but we gave not. One.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Speaking of three woods, you mentioned one that you like from the past. This listener as well mentioned one. They said TaylorMade brought the V-Steel Soul back with the new Sim Fairway. Why is it better than my old V-Steel model from 20 years ago?
You answered your own question, sir. Ma'am, it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
This new Sim line from TaylorMade are very easy to hit. Yeah. Go and bring your V-Steel from 20 years ago to your local pro, your local shop, you know, any simulator.
Yeah.
You know, if there's an app on your phone that is a simulator app that somehow picks up, you know, your swing
anything.
Speed, it's going to go yeah. further.
Ball speed is going to be way different. I mean, the faces on these now, the material that they use is thinner. We get a lot more rebound effect. It's definitely faster across the entire part of the face. Especially three woods nowadays. I mean, they're built more like drivers as far as speed wise. So, although the sole, you know, the design will still work pretty much the same, and you know, you can't beat the look of your old one. There's no way you're going to be able to compare the ball speeds.
No, and this Sim line, this is from like this is just I'm not paid by TaylorMade by any means. I just go and hit them every club in there.
The three wood is crazy.
The three wood's great. The hybrid, you know, I was chirping the hybrid. I was chirping this hybrid
about
Rory McIlroy.
Right?
I have the same problem. Hybrids go left for me. I bought a 3-iron, like a driving iron last year, and it goes. I thought, you know, this thing can't go left for me. It goes left for me. I've been testing this Sim hybrid as well. It's not going left for me. So maybe Rory might be playing it a little bit longer and playing with that kind of flower pot bag of his. But the 3-wood's long. You could probably play a 5-wood. All brands have great fairway woods out nowadays. So if you're actually still playing your V-Steel from 20 years ago, it's time to get off your wallet and head to your local, you know, your local pro shop or your local shop and pick up something new.
Definitely. All right. A couple more questions here. When do you know you're ready to play tournament golf for the first time?
Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares?
I agree.
Do you want to?
Just go do it.
Yeah. Do you want to play tournament golf? Exactly. Like we joked about on here. About you going out for, you know, this you know, Monday qualify for a senior tour. Right? You have zero expectations.
For sure.
Are you ready to compete on the senior tour?
No. But
that was almost in harmony. Yeah. Wanna try that again? Are you ready to compete on the senior tour?
No.
But it would be really fun and you would enjoy the experience and it'd be cool to go out there.
Yeah, you might learn something from it. You might find something in your game. You might play a great golf course. You might meet some other players. There's lots of things to get out of tournament golf.
It's just about finding that competitive spot. One of my favorite weeks of the year is, you know, those intersectional matches. Those are fun and there's no cat, like you're usually matched up with a guy
similar handicap.
Area maybe one or two depending on. Those are fun. Just find a tournament that sounds fun. I know of one called the Flagstick Open. We're
there
gonna
you
be
go.
Pitching it every single week coming up, playing it. We have some different flights in it. It's a great time and it doesn't matter. It's just a different way to hold yourself accountable throughout 18 holes, finish every shot, play everything by the rules, and you know, who cares? At the end of the day, who cares? You're not winning money out there.
Yeah, I agree. Just, you know what? If you're interested in it, just go for it. I don't think it's a matter of thinking, you know, I'm ready. Obviously, you know, if somebody's a 30 handicap, they're not going to be able to get in the field for a Canadian Open qualifier. That's a whole different, you know, a different story. But if you're just making a transition from casual play to tournament play, throw your cap in the ring, go play, get what you can out of it, and then, you know, go back again and do it all over again if you enjoyed it.
Love it.
All right, two last questions here. This one's sort of interesting because it's really hard to sort of, you know, go towards one or the other. But one of the listeners asked, what was the best Canadian online golf store? There's lots of choices there. Obviously, there's the big box stores that you go to. If you're somebody's looking for used, they can look at a company like Global Golf. They've got a good website as well. Canadian Pro Shop Online is some guys that we know from Eastern Ontario as well. They have a good site as well. You know what? There's not really so much of a a best. There's a best experience. It depends what you're looking for. When you start talking about some of the more expensive clubs, the premium clubs, you're not going to see a lot of variations in price. So a lot of it's going to come down to service and how they can, you know, take care of you. You got to consider as well customization, fitting, all sorts of those different factors as well, whether they're capable of doing it. I'm not sure what this person is looking for in their online store. They might be just buying tees. I'm not too sure. But those are just some general suggestions. I don't know if you've got some ideas on that one.
Well, I mean, I'm biased.
Of course.
In a sense of I am employed by the one,
large
the one you probably
store.
Know of.
Yeah.
But I like, you know, when I first thought about this, I'm also employed by somebody that's, you know, a company that just is trying to make commerce and the experience for both
right.
the business
yeah, for
and
sure.
customers better for everyone.
Yeah.
So you actually touched on the one word I would say, experience.
Yeah.
What place is giving me the best experience?
Right.
Both in an online and in person. And the online as well is the huge part there. What's the easiest selling experience? You
right.
know, is it easier? I know it might be $10 less over here, but does it take, you know, longer to get it? Does
mm-hmm.
it, can, yep. you know, does is a checkout process?
Yep.
I could go on forever about this. We're going to lose all of our subscribers. Just find the best experience for you. Go
Agreed.
Do it. The key here, though, get fit. We're going to talk about it. It doesn't matter. Just go get fit for it, whatever it is. And, you know, even if you have to pay just for the fitting and then you want to buy it elsewhere, that's fine by me. I don't really care. Just make sure you're getting fit. That will be the best experience in the end because you're going to be hitting it better.
Perfect. All right, last one here. If you could change one thing in golf right now to boost the future of the game, what would it be?
Ooh.
That's a big one too.
Jeez, the future. Like, hand of God of golf.
Do you want me to take it?
Why don't you start?
All right. Yeah. Real simple for me. I just want to see opportunities for golfers, especially junior golfers, just to get them connected to the game. And unfortunately, in some markets, the price point is a barrier for a lot of players. I would just like to see a lot more lower priced junior programs, junior memberships with a real welcome to bring juniors into the golf course. A lot of people will talk about junior golf and say, oh, you know, I love having junior golfers and new golfers, as long as they're not in front of me. And I think we've talked about that before, but you know, I know for myself, I look back this week, I was digging into a golf course that I played when I was 10 years old. It was $3 for 9 holes in the middle of Saskatchewan. This is 40 years ago. They're now up to a hearty $5 for that same age player, $165 for the family of the year. It's not much of a golf course, but it's a chance.
It's a golf course.
It's a golf course. It's a chance for somebody to connect to the game, get involved in the game. We see this in first tee programs, all sorts of different other programs across Canada, throughout the states as well. But I'd just like to see more opportunity programs at golf courses to be welcoming to junior players.
I like that. My brain was going to multiple places here. I really thought not allow the USGA to make any decisions.
I'm not gonna do that because you got to.
I just said I thought.
You gotta remember they've done a lot of great programs and they support a lot of great programs and things like drive, chip, and putt would not exist if it was not for the USGA.
That's a fact. So going back to what you just said, hey, it was a thought, Scott. Can we just relax
here for
1 second? You know what?
Getting a little heated there.
Remember the time you said you weren't going to rant and then you went on for 20 minutes?
Yeah, okay.
It's my time. I was thinking that, and then I thought, I like the price point. I think I'm going to go with the price point. And if I had a magic wand, this is how tee times would look like to me. And maybe it's unfair now that I think about it, but maybe it's the right thing. I think every tee time should almost just be a bidding system from, you know, $0. So mm-hmm. I want to play at 7 a.m. I throw a $10 bid on there. Let's say it's 10 bucks. Throw a $10 bid on there. If somebody outbids me, I get a bid on it, and maybe there's up to whatever. I think that would be a cool way to do it. Is that the only thing I would change in golf, though? I don't know, but like, that was the first thing I came to.
I think we can do a whole golf show about this.
Oh,
I mean, a whole podcast.
Maybe we should one day.
Yeah.
Is you know, list this off. That's one thing. If it's to boost the future of the game, though, is the wording in there. You took it right with the junior side of things. I would love to. Here's what I think. I would love to see more events like they had last week in Australia.
Yes.
With women and men combined. And we need one that is done by the PGA Tour. And that will build the true future of golf in both sides of things. And, you know, you and I are huge fans of the LPGA Tour. These are, you know, ladies that care about the game through and through.
Fantastic athletes.
Underrated. If you've been to a PGA Tour event, you've been to multiple PGA Tour events, and that's the only event you've gone to, you're missing out. Yep. The LPGA is a whole other thing. The accessibility of the players, the care for each player out there. The PGA Tour needs a step up, and they need a step. If I'm changing one thing, they're creating an event that happens not just once. I'm thinking like
multiple times,
five times a year, yeah. Where it is a co-event.
Love it.
The Zurich Classic, does it bring anything to you right now? No, it doesn't bring anything to you. Would it bring something to you if it was more of a partnered event with both the ladies and the guys?
Absolutely. I love watching the Vic Open. I mean, the chance, you know, the opportunity to see them go back and forth between women's groups, men's groups, and to see those players play on the same golf course, same hole locations, and, you know, it made it that much more interesting than
just watching. Why can't we do that on the PGA Tour? Why can't we have literally, and it's not that hard to do. This is math. There is a mathematician that can be out there that can say, based on the slope of this course, the rating of this course, how far the men hit it, how far the women hit it, this is the distance gap between each tee block that makes sense to give both the same fair advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Go play. Winner takes the prize. You know, women don't win $2 million an event.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. Create an event like that. It's going to be great. The best of the best will win. And if you're one of those people that are like, oh, well, make the women play the same tees as the guys, shut up. Just shut up. It's nonsense.
Yeah.
Let's grow the game. I think this is an event right now. I don't know. I just don't even get how it's not in existence. So if I'm waving a magic wand, my first answer was garbage. This answer is let's create an event that has both of them, and let's play for all the marbles.
All right, sounds good. That's the mailbag for this week.
I love it. Let's wrap it up. We need a tip of the week before we wrap it up. I'm going to be working. Whatever your tip is, I need to be working on the beach in Mexico. Think of me in a nice like 8-inch inseam shorts.
Wow.
No shirt. Burnt probably like to a red. I'm looking like a lobster out
there. This is probably not the tip that you want to see that
I got a glass of tequila that I'm using as my club, so what's my tip?
Well, I'm going to talk about pelvis rotation, which I don't really want to see you in a banana hammock with doing pelvis rotation on the Mexican beach.
Stick on Instagram.
All right. One of the things here is the pelvis is the engine of the golf swing. So what happens a lot of times, I see a lot of golfers with poor footwork. It makes their swing really less effective, and much of it comes from a lack of pelvis turn. I mean, some people have range of motion issues. They can't turn their pelvis as much, but in most cases, the lack of pelvis turn has a lot to do, and this is talking about backswing and downswing. It has to do with a lot of poor understanding of how to swing the golf club. A lot of them are focused much on their upper body, but you need the lower body to support the upper body and help control lots of different things in the golf swing, including contact with the ball, low point of the swing, club face angle, swing direction. These are all factors that are certainly very important about, you know, hitting the golf ball where you want to in the shape that you want to as well. So you can do all that without a really significant pelvis turn, but it's easier with it. And really, if we look at tour averages in a backswing, we'll see, you know, the pelvis turn 29 to 45 degrees at the top of the backswing. This is something you want to work on with your coach. It really has to do with the sequence of the golf swing. Really what happens if you start swinging your upper body first, you're probably never going to move your pelvis. There's really not much point. It just sort of goes along. You want it to drive the golf swing. You want it to be the engine of the swing.
What can somebody say? They don't have a golf club. They're not able to hit balls right in the winter. Like, what is it? What can they think of? Like, is there a drill you can think of that allows them to do this without the actual ability of a club in their hand, maybe?
Yeah, a lot of people, I'll get them just to get a heavier type object, because what happens when you have a light object like a golf club in your hand, you just tend to move your arms. So what I'll get them to do sometimes is grab something heavier. I mean, if they're at the driving range, you know, a full bucket of balls. If they're at home and maybe they got a home gym, grab a medicine ball, and they can basically work on their backswing there, where they're basically just holding that close to their chest and they're rotating their whole chest and their pelvis in their backswing, and they'll find that because they're moving their pelvis in the backswing, it also tends to turn in the downswing as well. So just working with a slightly heavier object where you know that you have to move your body to do that rather than just your arms, and generally it'll get a lot more success out of it.
I like it. There was a video recently that David Duvall, like from like 15 years ago, and it just it just, that's all I was seeing movement. Was
yeah.
this
his
full,
hip turn.
Because yep. he was a big dude.
Yeah, he was.
He was a big dude, but just full hip. And it was even more on the fall through. His like, you know, his stomach was almost fully facing the target by the yeah. time he's hitting. Oh, it's just crazy. The full pelvic turn. So go check out that. Rory's obviously somebody you see it on. And,
definitely.
And everybody. But that's a great tip. Something I'm going to be working on the beach in Mexico. I'm going to grab a heavy object.
That scares me. Thank you.
You know, like a bucket of beer.
Like, that'll work.
Be turning that'll my, work. My pelvis. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Taylor Pendrith, for coming on the podcast. Make sure you check out the Korn Ferry Tour. He's going to be up there all year. You know, he's getting close.
He really is.
He's getting close. You know, you win twice on the Mackenzie
Tour. Yeah.
It's going to come. It's going to come. So watch out for Taylor.
And he's fun to watch. He really is. I mean, this guy bashes the ball. He's matched it with a lot better short game now. He's healthy. So he's just fun to watch. So if you happen to have a Korn Ferry Tour that's near you, a tour event, get out and watch him. And I guarantee you it'll be worth the price of admission.
I love it. All right. Well, I'm off. I'm off to the beach. And you're going to be sticking around. So... You know, next week, listen up. Scotty's going to have a special guest. Who knows who? You never know on this podcast. So, Scotty, when will you see them?
See you next week.
Like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.